Welcome back to the Valley Voices podcast. I'm Summer Keppel. On our last podcast, we spoke with the winners from our Silver Lining Story Slam. You heard stories about a road trip gone awry, an unusual Valentine's Day, and nearly daily conversations that sparked between children and trans people. Today, we're talking to our winners from our third slam of the season. On May 3rd, 10 storytellers from across the valley stood on stage at Gateway City Arts in Holyoke to tell their favorite landline tales. With me today are the three crowd favorites, Dan Glanville, Amy Loisel, and Tulip Chattery. We'll be hearing stories about an intrusive mother-in-law, the ancient idea of complete aloneness, and how a wrong number turned into an almost love story. These three will be performing again at the Best of Valley Voices competition at the Academy of Music on October 13th. First with me now is Dan Glanville. Welcome, Dan.
Hi there. Thank you for having me here today.
So one of the points of our story slams is to get people out in the community to both share and listen to the stories of their neighbors. So why do you think sharing stories is so important?
Well, I think that really stories make up who we are. They really make up the existence of our being. And what they do is they enable us to tell put a little bit of a window into our lives so that people can see in them. So I think stories are really important to everything we do. I first met my mother-in-law when she was the unintended guest on a telephone conversation that I was having with my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife. You see, in the 1980s, we had landlines really as our primary form of communication. That was in addition to the human interaction that we did every day. And if you had a landline in your house at the time, you would recall that in order to find out if it was in use, you would pick up the landline gently and you would listen into it. And in normal houses, if you heard voices, you would hang up gently. If you were a member of my house, you would pick up abruptly and you would say, "Hurry up, jackass, I need the phone." Well, on that particular night, I was talking to Faith and we heard one click of someone picking up. We didn't hear a second click, and we waited for a moment. And I said to her, "Is somebody on the phone?" And she said, "Well, that's my mother." And she said, "Mom, could I please have some privacy?" To which her mother responded, for the first time I heard her voice, in a rather tired yet British-sounding voice, "Faith, if you want privacy, get your own effing phone with your own effing line." Needless to say, she did not use the PG version. And so if you fast forward to where we were this past winter with my mother-in-law, my son Alex here and I were with her down in Florida, and she was telling us that she had just done her DNA testing and that she had miraculously discovered that both her and my father-in-law were of British royalty. Well, I bit my tongue until it bled. And I realized where that faint English accent might have come from. But I wondered what in that genetic makeup could possibly have taught her to swear like a sailor. Well, anyway, I lived about 3 miles from Faith in a very small and overcrowded house. And a member of that house was my mother, and she was the queen of the busy signal. And I believe that Bell Labs engineer somewhere designed the busy signal to be the most obnoxious sound known up until the 1970s. And it was a message to youth of America. They were basically telling teenagers, "Screw you, kid, you're not getting a ride home, you're never getting the homework assignment you need, and you may never go to prom." And my mother, like mothers across America, were guilty of keeping phones busy for about 10 of 24 hours a day. But I can't just limit this to the women in my life, because my father deserves mention. He is by no means a technical genius. In fact, he would take pride here tonight telling you that in the 1980s and up until today, he has never utilized an ATM for banking. Perhaps he was ahead of the cybersecurity scare or the identity theft scare, but I think not, because he used the phone about 5 times per year. And when he used the telephone, he would often need the assistance of my mother, who was the resident expert. And those same Bell Lab engineers that had designed the busy signal by this time had designed something called call waiting. And the way designed call waiting, it was to see if you could get into the call to get your message across. But fear not, if you were calling into the Glanville house, you had no chance. because my mother could ignore a call waiting signal like nobody's business, and my father would screw it up so badly that you would hang up. In fact, he would get frustrated and angry, and you would hear him yell out, "Oh, God damn it, babe, they're trying to break in again." Now, there's two things about that that are bothersome. The sickening thought that he referred to my mother publicly as babe, and the other thought that he believed that people were trying to break in, which led me and my brothers to wonder why anyone would want to break in and take the shit that we didn't even want. So you might wonder why I tell this story, because I believe that technology has proven to be a wonderful advancement in all of our lives, making them simpler and easier. But I believe that human interaction has also defined who we are, and it has helped us to tell stories to our children and our friends about those that we have interacted with, and about those members of our family that are crazy, like the people I referenced to you here today. So in closing, I have a request of all of you, and I'm reminded of the 1980s campaign slogan of New England Telephone, which said, "Reach out and touch someone." Of course, figuratively and not literally, because today that can get you in quite a bit of trouble, you will be amazed the impact that it can have on you and the person you are calling. I thank you very much for your time.
A lot of people in the audience seem to enjoy hearing about the antics of the family members in your life. Could you say a little bit more about the characters you discussed throughout your story?
Yeah, so characters they were, and they still are. They're my parents and my mother-in-law. You know, all three of them in their own way are very loving people, but they just have different ways of showing it. And sometimes it's those people that are most impactful in your life, and it's those stories that people can find a bit of commonality with in their lives that I think help help bring a story to life. So that's why I use them. They're really good characters, but it also helps demonstrate what they are as human beings and brings common factors for all of us together.
You talked a lot in your story about the importance of human connection. Right now, we're obviously living in extremely advanced times as far as technology, and if we want to, we're able to limit ourselves to very little verbal communication. So in this day and age, how do you continually make efforts to maintain communication relationships with your friends and family?
Well, it's a great question, and I think we as individuals have to own that. We have to make the conscious choice. Technology is a great thing, and it's given us so many ways to make our lives so much more simple and really connect us to the world. But at the same time, it can isolate us. And we just have to be conscious that interacting with human beings, whether it be those who are close to us or those who are members of our community, really make up the existence of our lives. Technology's great, great, wonderful tools that I couldn't live without. But we have to remember that it was human beings that made that technology because of interaction with others. And if we continue to keep the interaction going, we can truly benefit from technology and still live the lives we were intended to live.
Now we're going to be talking to another one of our winners from the Landline Story Slam, Amy Loisel. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
You mentioned to me at the Story Slam that you're actually a college professor, meaning you're probably fairly familiar with public speaking. But can you tell us what it was like to go on stage and share such a personal story?
Well, I have done a lot of public speaking, and not just as a college professor, but also just as a PhD candidate right now. I have to give lectures and presentations of papers, but there is an analytical distance. This was a little difficult because it was going to be performing it in front of strangers. So I did think to myself, do I really want to share this? And then I thought it was an important story to tell. And for me, getting up and feeling like I was breaking down some stigmas and sharing a story that maybe other people wouldn't feel comfortable sharing was important to me.
Yeah, so it sounds like a lot of your career is storytelling. So why do you think it's so important to share stories?
Yeah, I love stories. I grew up reading, and I was the type of kid that would sit in my bedroom and read or go outside and read. And so to me, what's important about it is the ability to develop empathies and to understand that other people have similar feelings in different circumstances, or you can identify with people who are going through something maybe in a different time or a different place, but that you can have that human connection. It just, it expands humanity and our connections to each other.
Hi, I'm Amy Loisel with the double E's. I'm glad that when I was a teenager and my father was really sick, that we had a regular old landline. It was 1986, and it wasn't just a landline, it was a regular old landline. None of the new bells and whistles of call waiting, caller ID, and no matter how many times my sisters and I begged my mother for a cordless phone, we were certainly not getting one of those. We did, due to our bickering, get her to eventually agree to a 15-foot cord. We had one telephone table in the kitchen with the one phone, and because of our constant bickering in the kitchen over who'd been on the phone the longest, had somebody hung up the phone on somebody else, somebody's boyfriend was calling and they needed to get off the phone, my mother finally said, take the bickering into the living room. But everything came into the house through that one landline. And we had a regular suburban house. And so on the second floor, my sister shared a bedroom. My mother had her bedroom, and I was down the hall. And so at night, the kitchen could get very dark, and you could actually get a little bit of privacy. And that was when I often called my father. My dad was struggling with a very, very heavy depression at that time, the type of depression and consuming anxiety that just pulls a person down and really just drags a household apart. So he had moved in with his sister. His sister was 13 years older than him, my Aunt Gloria. She was the type of woman that still went and got her hair done in rollers for every family event and wedding and sent everybody a birthday and Christmas card without fail. And she had helped raise my dad. And so he went to live with her to try to get on his feet, try to get some emotional stability. And his boss had given him a leave of absence to be able to take some time because he was a charming and funny man before the depression had pulled him down. Now, we didn't tell anybody about this because it's the 1980s and people don't really talk about depression. They certainly don't talk about self-destructive behavior. And so none of the neighbors or friends or anybody knew, but Aunt Gloria knew, my mom knew, my sisters and I, and a couple close people. And so at that telephone table on that phone is where I often talk to my dad. And one Sunday in July, I called him up. I waited until my sisters were upstairs listening to music. My mother must have been reading in her room. And I went to the dark kitchen with just the bulb over the stove, and I called my dad. He was supposed to go back to his job the next day. And I called him. I said, Dad, everything's going to be all right. It'll be good. They want you there. Everything will be fine. He said, yep. Just take it 1 minute at a time. You can get through it. He said, I love you. I said, I love you, Dad. I hung up the phone and went back to my room. The next morning, my mom gets up and goes to work. It's the summer, and I am 16, but I don't have to work at my summer job that day. So when the phone rings that morning, I pick it up. Hello? Hi, who's this? Amy? It's Aunt Gloria. I need to talk to your mom. Is she there? No, she's at work. Oh, well, can I have the number? I need to talk to your mom. I hang up the phone. I go and get my sisters. We go and sit in the den and we watch The Price is Right and we wait for that phone. That phone in the kitchen on the telephone table, that's where everything's going to come through. That phone call that says, it was just a misunderstanding, something happened, here's the concrete answer. But instead, as my sisters and I are sitting there quietly waiting for that one phone to ring, we see my mother's car come down the street and pull into the driveway. She comes upstairs, and I glanced up at her, and I remember her looking at the three of us, and she says, girls, your dad has died. No! The rest of the day vanishes. I really don't remember anything. But when I remember the next minute, the phone's ringing down the hall. My door's open just ajar, but my room is dark. It's nighttime, and I'm laying in my bed. There's no sound except for the television down the hall, but I hear my mother pick up the phone. Hello? Yes, Jane, Amy's here right now, but she can't come to the phone. Now, in the 1980s, we know what that means. Somebody got grounded, somebody's in trouble, somebody didn't do their homework, somebody has a chore to do. I don't care what Jane thinks at that moment. For the first time in my teenage life, I don't want to answer the phone. I don't care who's on the phone. I can't imagine having that moment now and having to deal with what are people posting and texting and whatever on Facebook. I just want to be alone in my room. And I hear my mother say, okay, Jane, I'll give her the message. And I just stay in bed, quiet, alone, by myself.
So I think one of the main things that I got from your story is that it's almost impossible to be entirely alone these days. How different do you think this experience would have been for you if you were growing up now?
That was one of the questions that immediately came into my head when I saw the theme landline, because I thought to myself, all those years of experience that I had growing up with only the landline, and I'm old enough to remember when I started using a smartphone and how intrusive it felt. So when I thought back on this experience, I thought I would have had so much more anxiety.
How has alone time been something that's been important to you in the healing process since this time in your life?
I've always described myself as an outgoing introvert. So I've considered myself somebody that likes alone time. I don't think that's true of all people. I do think as human beings, we do need more quiet time than we're probably getting now, because there is so much constant digital and electronic and light stimulation always everywhere. But for me in particular, I really get a lot out of alone time.
So at the end of the night, each storyteller is asked to give three words to describe their stories to remind the audience of what they spoke about. So you did just use a couple words to describe yourself, but how would you use three words to describe what you represent?
I guess for me, three words to describe what I represent would say reflections in action, because I pride myself in being a teacher or a writer that really does a lot of reflecting and spends a lot of time in thought and thinking about people and causes and what type of world we live in. But I also believe very much in action. So doing things like storytelling and being part of a community activity or engaging students in actions, you know, in and outside of the classroom. So that, to me, there has to be that balance between reflection and action.
Now we have Tulip Chowdhury. Welcome, Tulip.
Thank you for having me.
Tulip, you're an author, so writing is usually your form of communication, but how is performing?
It was an amazing experience to be able to perform as a storyteller from my childhood. I have been very much used to storytelling. My grandmother used to tell me stories. In fact, I could go to bed without food at night, but I had to have a story from her. And she ran out of stories and she would make up some. And even my nanny, she also had to have some stories for me all the time. So it was amazing that I could now tell stories. When I was small, that was the way of sharing stories. And we had books, but few of them, in where I lived. So it was just life coming back, an unique experience.
Hello. Can you hear? I'm always worried about my petite height, you know, and everything goes wrong because of this height, it seems. So hello, everyone. As Vanessa introduced me, I'm Tulip, the humankind. You know, these days you see so many natural tulips around you. I wish I could be one of them. Maybe a red one, the color of happiness and love. But love, is it really happy for everyone? Ah, that reminds me, my story. So everything began with a wrong connection on my telephone in Bangladesh. It was a winter morning, 2005. My husband and children were out. I was resting in my bed. The telephone rang on my bedside table. I picked up the receiver and sleepily said, "Hello." "Daisy, darling, listen." Came a man's voice from the other end. "Excuse me, I am not Daisy. I am Tulip. Take your number, please." I broke in, repeating my own number. "Oh, always dialing wrong numbers. People shout, 'You didn't,'" came from that other end. "Oh, that's okay, we all make mistakes." Then we started talking about this and that, until he casually mentioned that he was a writer. "You are a writer? I write too." I was excited. And that opened the floodgates. We talked for over an hour about reading, writing, music, whatnot, and eagerly waited to talk again the next day. Around the same time next day, prrrng, prrrng goes the phone, that one single ringtone we have, that's unique. It's him from yesterday. And the floodgates of yesterday turned into oceans. And his voice and his words, they were like music and poetry. He even sung my favorite song for me. I thought, how different from my husband. In 20 years of my arranged marriage, whom I met on the night of my wedding, and who despises my storybooks and my writing. But this man, it seems, we are one spirit in two bodies. So, day three, day four, 1 week, we go on talking every day. Until one day, just before putting the phone down, he says, "Oh, Tulip, I love you." Whoops! From a stranger, those magic words. My husband, he always tells me, "We are already married. Why these foolish words? There is no need." But this man, he has conquered my heart and my dreams. So we have to meet someday. On the day of our meeting, I stood in front of the door of the Chinese restaurant, wondering, shall I go in or turn back? But the power of love never gotten was too strong, so I stepped in. Down the hall I walked, the left-hand side, last room he had said he would be. I stood in the doorway. Blue shirt, white sweater, glasses, that's him. I was in my pink sari. As I entered, he looked up. Our eyes met. It was love at first sight. Shook our hands in the touch. Feelings ignited I've never known before. We ordered something, we ate, but heart wasn't in the food at all. Time flew, it was time to go home. And we were planning on the next meeting when another family came and settled down on the left-hand table. Two small children, I looked at them. Suddenly I thought, what am I doing? My children, they're crying. "Ma, Ma." I looked at the man across my table and said, "I can't do this. I can't ruin my children and my family." He stared at me and then said, "I understand. But we'll remain friends and write our love story. Love once born is never dies." Yes, love came to me, but it wasn't blind at all. Thank you.
What made you not just hang up the phone immediately? Do you feel like there was some type of instinct that made you just not hang it up?
In our country at that time, the wrong numbers were quite frequent. Something in the man's voice, because he was evidently looking for somebody close to him. The way he started, it seems very intimate. So I just wanted to make sure that the person at the other end really did get the person he was seeking. There was something, I suppose, in his voice, a helplessness, something that just, I just waited to hear what he says next because he didn't hang up either.
Did you always feel like there was an expiration date with your emotional relationship with the man through the phone?
I think there was an emotional being which was never fulfilled in an arranged marriage. To be honest, yes, we grow into companionship. We learn to respect each other as life partners. But the romantic me or the person I was seeking within wasn't there for my husband. So there was always, I think, a kind of dreamy inside me that wanted that one person who would really connect to my soul. And when we started talking, it was like, yes, he is the one. He connects to me so much better than the person with whom I share my roof. He gave me a sense of my elevated being.
So you ended with sort of a cliffhanger at the restaurant. Did you ever communicate with that man from the phone ever again?
We met at a point, and when I thought of the reality, like the fantasy or romanticism that was unfilled and I thought would get filled, suddenly came to a sudden reality that it may not happen at all. And the reality is against my family life with three children and my venturing into another life was sort of on a cloudy, very dreamy thing until I really come down to the point that my children are more important and I can sacrifice my personal longings from my heart.
Did you ever end your arranged marriage?
It isn't too long. I ended my arranged marriage in 2016. Although we had a family life was good. It was as a provider, he was excellent. As a father, my ex-husband was excellent. But I think at some point, we just drew away from each other when the children came away from home. And I remember, there was nothing even to talk about. He didn't like reading, writing, and everything I did, music. And I didn't I wasn't into his constant TV watching the same news 100 times. And I just didn't know how to connect.
Hey, thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So for a final parting question before we hear from Tulip again in October, what did you get out of your time being in the audience that night?
I find this way of storytelling unique. And before I came to America, that is 5 years back, and ultimately I caught up with Annie Pierre. Annie Pierre is always with me. When I listen, I think that's an amazing thing. I can connect to life and the people's voices.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Voices podcast, and a special thanks to our friends at Gateway City Arts for hosting the Landline Slam, and to our producing partners at the Academy of Music. In our next episode, you can hear the stories of our winners from the If I Knew Then Story Slam, held in June at Gateway City Arts. To subscribe to the Valley Voices podcast and catch up on old episodes, visit nepr.net/Valley Voices. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts. We also have a new Facebook group called Valley Storytelling Community. Veterans and newbies of storytelling are encouraged to join and share their voices with lots of supportive members. And if you missed out on season 4 of our Story Slams, no worries. Tickets for the Best of Valley Voices competition at the Academy of Music are now on sale. You can get yours at nepr.net/Valley Voices. I'm Summer Keppel. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.